and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. This is a public affairs program, one that I've hosted for the last 10 years now here at KDVS, and one of only 10 that you can hear on this radio station. Other public affairs programs have titles such as It's About You, This Week in Science, and Radio Parallax. If you want to find out more about the interesting, interactive, engaging, thought-provoking content and commentary that you can hear 10 times a week on this radio station, then point your browser at kdvs.org. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. I've got two great guests to introduce you to today. The first will be Oliver Jones. Oliver Jones is a journalist. He's an investigative reporter at People Magazine. He's also an award-winning poet. He won the Glasscock Poetry Award. And he will be joining us to represent some pop cultural news. We'll talk about upcoming movies, new releases, new unreleases, by which I mean movies that Oliver Jones has seen that we have not. And then I heard somewhere that there's going to be a new royal, a princess, and she's a commoner. It's a word you don't hear very often in this neck of the woods. We're going to talk to Oliver about the future Princess Catherine. That, and in the second half hour, we'll hear from San Francisco-based poet Stephen Gray. That and some jazz by Ray Brown and some recorded poetry. Today we might even hear some Dylan Thomas. So stick around and keep it right here for Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. Well, a couple times a year, I like to turn to our pop culture and film correspondent, Oliver Jones, when he's not investigating news stories for us here at KDVS. He's working as an investigative reporter and as a writer at People Magazine, where he's been for a number of years. People Magazine, of course, is famous for having had Princess Diana on its cover many dozens of times, perhaps more or just as much as just about anyone else who's been on People. People Magazine is also famous for its coverage of films and movies. So we're going to talk to Oliver now about both of those topics. Oliver Jones, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
How's it going, Dr. Andy? What's going on?
Oh, it's going really well here. You know, it's the fall, which means that new movies are coming out, and a lot of them are going to be considered for Oscars because those people in the Academy, evidently they have really short memories.
I guess that's the way it goes. In fact, on a Sunday, they threw an Oscars and nobody cared. They gave the Governor's Awards, which was the honorary Oscars, out on Saturday night at a lovely dinner that I attended. I sat between on my left side was Jimmy Kahn, and on my right side was Kevin Spacey, who brought it as his date, Heather Graham.
Wow.
Yes.
Had you chatted casually with Oscar winner Kevin Spacey before?
I think I interviewed him once. I don't know how casual it was.
Yeah.
This is definitely our most casual moment. In fact, it was so casual that while he was sitting at the table, his bow tie broke, and it was not a tie yourself bow tie. It was one of those fake bow ties, and
right.
And the loop broke, and his former assistant came with a piece of tape and fixed it. But of course, his former assistant is currently the producer of the film Social Network, so he had moved up in the world, but he was still fixing Kevin Spacey's tie.
Wow. That's a great story. Now, what did you and Kevin Spacey talk about?
The highlight of my evening, I have to tell you, was listening to Jimmy Kahn explain to the phone onto someone how to record something on his DirecTV. I'm not really talented enough to do the impersonation myself, but it was definitely a impersonation I wish I could do. I mean, it was about the funniest thing I'd ever heard in my life, the way he was barking orders, you know, turn to channel 101, the red button. It was very funny.
So for people at listening at home who are not in the industry, do you want to remind us who Jimmy Kahn is?
James Kahn, of course.
James Kahn.
Star of Godfather, played hot-headed Sonny Corleone.
Right.
Was there toasting Francis Ford Coppola, who was receiving the Irving Thalberg Award, which is the highest honor that the Academy gives to producers.
Excellent. And I think that he was also nominated. Wasn't he nominated for an Academy Award for Misery?
For Misery, was he? Well, I don't know. He might have been. That sounds like that's a possibility.
Yeah.
His friend Robert, a.k.a. Bobby Duvall, also from Godfather and Godfather 2,
right.
was there. And from my view, Bobby Duvall, who I have spoken to casually in other circumstances, his biggest concern of the evening was that somebody might accidentally photograph him standing next to Dennis Kucinich, who was also there that evening with his, 6-foot Amazonian wife.
Right.
So that was very exciting. He was I overheard him talking to Jimmy Kahn about his mortification at the prospect of being photographed with Dennis Kucinich. Of course, the very liberal congressman from Ohio, Robert Duvall, is one of the very few Republican minds, although I wouldn't call him in Hollywood. He lives in Virginia, some farm somewhere.
Oh, right. Yeah, Robert Duvall. That's right.
Yeah.
So you had a bunch of the Corleone brothers there.
Well, he plays Tom. He's Tom Hayden, you remember.
I know, but they called him a brother.
They
called him a brother.
Him a brother, an adopted
they
brother.
They adopted him, yeah.
Yes. Pacino was noticeably absent, but De Niro was there. He introduced both Coppola and Eli Wallach, the legendary character actor, 95-year-old Eli Wallach, who was receiving his first Oscar, an honorary Oscar.
That's wonderful. Now, did anyone sing to Eli Wallach?
That's right. Tony Bennett sang a couple of songs. I don't have my notes on hand. I'll tell you what the songs were. One was from Cabaret. That I had to say, that I was a table away from Tony Bennett just kind of standing up and singing. It was quite stunning. That took my breath away even more so than sitting next to Kevin Spacey and James Caan. when Eli Wallach accepted his Oscar, he told a joke. He's 95 years old, and he told a joke about a group of guys getting together to get a present for a 90-year-old man. This is the last thing he said before he took his Oscar.
Yeah.
So to get a present for a 90-year-old man, so they get together and they decide to buy him a hooker. And the hooker gets some information. Oh, it's a man's 90th birthday. She says, okay, she can handle that. She knocks on the door. And and the old man opens the door, and she says, "Hi, I'm here for super sex." And the old man says, "I'll take the soup."
There you go. I was wondering where you were going with that, and I had my finger on the dump button. But yeah,
well,
but you could say that.
So, yeah, I think it's the first time that I got close to the dump button on this show. Maybe it's not, but it was very funny. And Eli Wallach has been married to the same woman, Ann Robinson, also an actress, for 62 years.
Wow.
And she said that night that that the secret to their long marriage was the fact that they do a lot of plays together that depict a lot of terrible marital strife. And they save their therapy bills that way by airing each other's grievances through the words of, Eugene O'Neill and others.
Right, so they yell at each other on stage, so they don't yell at
exactly.
each other at home. That's great. Well, 62 years, that's pretty impressive for Hollywood. I know that Carl Malden was married to his wife for a long time.
Well, they were sitting at the same table as Francis Ford and Eleanor Coppola, who have been married for about 54 years. So there were a few that night that had a lot of. In fact, I spoke to another couple. Eva Marie Saint and her husband had been together, I think, just around that many years. So there were quite a few. You know, they do tend to say that about Hollywood couples. But for anecdotally, I've met quite a few that have been together for extraordinary amounts of time.
Excellent. Well, if you're just joining us, my guest this afternoon is Oliver Jones. He's a reporter at People magazine, and he attended the what's the name of the Oscar celebration that you attended?
It was the Governor's Awards. It was the Governor's Avenue,
Awards.
Second annual Governor's Awards. These are basically the awards that they give to the old luminaries, and they had felt that they'd slowed down the Oscars, so they sort of gave them their own kind of boozy, fun, and unscripted night of their own. And I must tell you, it was quite delightful.
I'm sure it was, and of course it helps the quotes real Oscar ceremony move along at a fast pace.
So yeah,
they just have
right.
to show
and,
highlights.
And it actually, and for those who get to attend the Governor's Awards, it's fun to see Oscars handed out to A, people who most certainly and undebatably deserve them, and B, it's not a bad night when the biggest star in the room is Eli Wallach, you know.
Absolutely.
Just like last year I went, it was Lauren Bacall, won her first ever Oscar. I was just a few feet away from it when she got it, and I must say I think I was more choked up by the moment than she was.
She's a pretty cool character.
Yeah, she is. She is, and she's exactly as you would hope her to be.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Oliver, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to hear a message from one of the sponsors of this show, which is the Yolo Federal Credit Union. And then when we come back, I'm going to ask you about some upcoming movies.
Terrific. And if anyone has any questions, they should feel free to call in.
Excellent. Well, if you have questions for Oliver Jones, reporter of People magazine, about Hollywood, actors, anything else, give us a call at 530-752-2777. My name is Dr. Randy, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. In the second half of the show, we will hear from Stephen Gray. He is a San Francisco-based poet, and he points out in his bio he's got rent control. Right now, we're joined by Oliver Jones. And Oliver, you asked for a caller. Are you ready to be joined by our first caller this afternoon?
Well, boy, howdy, am I.
All right, let's see how it works out. Hello, caller. You are on the live line with Oliver Jones of People Magazine. Are you there, caller? Going once.
That was just as exciting as I'd hoped.
Okay. I've hung up on that caller, and now we'll see if someone else wants to. We've got a line open. 530-752-2777. If you have a question for Hollywood investigative reporter Oliver Jones from People Magazine.
We just slowed this show down to a grinding halt, which is something they couldn't do to that runaway train in the new film Unstoppable that came out this weekend. I reviewed it in the People Magazine that should be on stands for at least for another day or two.
Now, that was pretty well reviewed overall. My wife and daughter went to see that, if you can imagine. She's 13, and so we're going to start taking her to PG-13 films. What did you think of Unstoppable?
It was a perfectly passable evening. I'm sure that it was fun for Geneva. I think it was definitely a wholesome bit of mindless entertainment so far as they go. I thought that the two stars of it, Chris Pine and Denzel Washington, worked rather well together, and it was pleasingly diverting. I was surprised that it got as many strong reviews as it did, but I was among the ones who gave it one.
Well, there you go. So, and that's Unstoppable, open this past weekend. How about something else that's coming up soon?
Well, in this week's special double issue of People Magazine, which has both the sexiest man alive, Ryan Reynolds, they did not consult me on that one, and I don't know how you didn't make the list this year, Dr. Andy, but I'll definitely look into that oversight. But
remind me who Ryan Reynolds is.
I think a lot of people are asking that question today. He is. He is an actor who is a Canadian and rather tall. He's married to the actress Scarlett Johansson, and he is due to be the Green Lantern in the upcoming Warner Brothers adaptation of the legendary comic book.
So it's kind of the opposite of the Governor's Ball. Instead of something that's long overdue, this is an award that's given on anticipation of being a big deal someday.
I guess so, although that's not necessarily what it has been traditionally.
Right.
But I will not speak ill of where the butter is breaded. But in this issue, I review the new Russell Crowe film, The Next 3 Days, doesn't really make a lot of sense concept of a film that somewhat borrows from the film noir that I grew up on about a man whose wife is suddenly convicted of murder when she basically has all of her appeals exhausted, he goes about trying to break her out of jail. He's an English professor at a community college and rather a bumbling criminal, and turns himself into a criminal in order to break his wife out of jail. It's rather a slow-moving picture that's too much of a family melodrama. But there is the thriller elements in it do work, but it's comes a bit late.
Well, so a lot of the action is at the end of the movie, then.
Well, it's just a lot of the reason for wanting to sit through the movie is at the end of the movie. Yeah. But it's a slog getting there, but there is some payoff if you do.
If you do make it all the way through.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I've seen the ads for that one. They show a lot of the action scenes in the trailers.
It's interesting, though. It does make you wonder how, you know, if a normal individual without any degree of superpowers beyond a, you know, good DSL collection and some, you know, duct tape connection and some duct tape can actually, you know, become a kind of criminal mastermind and outthink, you know. So I did find the concept kind of intriguing. I gave it 2.5 stars in the magazine.
All right. Good. So we've got a couple action films. What else is coming up?
Well, yesterday I saw a film. I'm not allowed to say too much about it, but it was directed by Francis Ford Coppola's daughter, Sophia, called Somewhere. And it's a film about an actor, a sort of a big-time actor who resides in the famous Hollywood hotel, the Chateau Marmont, and lives a rather tedious life of hookers and press engagements, and his life is brought into some degree of focus when he's reunited with his 11-year-old daughter. In comparison to, I mean, her other films, such as Lost in Translation and Marie Antoinette, are intricately plotted in comparison to this one. I would say it's very light on dialogue and very light on most anything that you would traditionally see in the movie. But it was still quite interesting, and I've been thinking about it quite a bit since seeing it.
All right, good. And so we'll find out later in the year what the title of that film is.
Somewhere.
Oh, Somewhere.
Yeah, I think I said that somewhere in there, but you might have missed it.
All right.
One of those who's on first kind of titles.
Exactly. Somewhere. All right. And it's a Sofia Coppola film. And, of course, she won the Oscar for Best Screenplay, if I remember correctly, for that Bill Murray film.
Is that correct? Boy, you have a pretty good memory for this thing. I certainly remember that she was nominated as a director. She was only the first American woman to be nominated for an Oscar. I believe Jane Campion had, but of course we had a winner last year.
Absolutely, and it was about time. All right, good. What else was on your docket recently?
Coming up, I think next week or the week before next, I hope this makes it to the Varsity. If Sinesha hasn't booked it already, the King's Speech, which is a film about George VI, who had a crippling speech impediment. He's played by Colin Firth, who I think would have made an excellent and unusual choice for Sexiest Man Alive. Doing quite an impressive performance, but no less impressive than his co-star in the film, Jeffrey Rush, who's one of the more enjoyable actors, I think. And that film is certainly getting quite a bit of Oscar buzz, certainly surrounding the two central performances, and for the film itself and the movie's director, Tom Hooper, who's a first-time film director, but has garnered many, many awards. He directed the HBO John Adams and many other HBO movies, but it's his first movie.
John Adams was a big hit.
Yeah, he's won quite a few Golden Globes and all the other awards they hand out in this town.
It seems to me that if you want to be nominated for an Oscar and you're a British actor, such as Jeffrey Rush, then it's a good place to go to play one of the King Georges.
Well, Jeffrey Rush is Australian, and he plays an Australian speech therapist in it. It's Colin Firth who plays the very constricted George VI. The surprise, the kind of most delightful surprise in the film is Helena Bonham Carter, who after a long creative relationship with her husband, Tim Burton, finally sort of comes back to this planet in playing the Queen and consort Elizabeth, known to us as the Queen Mother.
Right. Interesting. You wouldn't think that she'd be old enough to play that part, but they can...
Well, it's from the sort of eve of World War II, so she was quite a bit younger at the time that she was playing it. And this film is sort of how George, or I guess he was Prince, known as Prince Albert at the time. You know, he became king reluctantly when his brother Edward married a divorce, or rather hooked up with a divorce American divorcee named Wallace Simpson, and
right.
Abdicated the throne, and he had to take it up despite the fact that everyone thought he was unintelligent because he had so much trouble speaking.
Well, why don't we jump over to the who I think is the great grandparent, or excuse me, great grandson of that particular king, and that would be Prince William.
Yeah. So there's a royal wedding. We're obviously very excited about that here at People Magazine. The royals have always been a very special franchise for our magazine, and we're certainly excited about this one. She's a very lovely young woman, Kate Middleton, who, despite the fact that she's, I think, the first commoner in something like 350 years to be married to be marrying a potential heir, is nonetheless terrifically wealthy and well-heeled. But her parents made their money through a gigantic party supply business. And
that's interesting. And there's a lot of hope for her, for saving the reputation of the royal family after all of its problems of the last couple decades.
I think people have been less fixated on the foibles and have sort of accepted those odd ducks for what they are. But I think that she certainly is restoring, you know, them as something nice to look at. And you know, she's lovely, and she's got the to die for hair, you know, and things and features like that. And it was certainly it was the first time she'd ever spoken publicly on Tuesday morning. And it should be noted that they did make their announcement, which everyone had thought would happen, but still nonetheless caught the world unawares. We were able to cover it in time for this week's People Magazine, and it is managed to squeeze it on the cover next to a Mr. Reynolds in repose.
Excellent. Well, we can certainly check that out. So that's the People Magazine, and what day of the week does People Magazine come out?
Typically, you'll find it in your neighborhood supermarket on Fridays.
On Fridays.
But sometimes you'll see it in various places Thursday, and if you live in a coastal city like New York, or in a media city, as soon as Wednesday. But typically Thursday night, Friday morning.
All right. Well, we'll have to look for that. We're running out of time on this segment. Do you have a sense of any upcoming stories that you're eager to take on?
I think that, like I said, everyone in our business is very excited for the royals to be jumping up again, and I think we're even more excited about the fact that they live so far away from us. So it won't be keeping us up at night.
Exactly, and plus, as you're generally a west of the Mississippi guy for People Magazine, if I remember correctly, no chance that you'll have to fly to London.
I don't think so. We do have people that can handle that over there and are very able at it and do a terrific job.
Excellent. Well, Oliver Jones, it's been a pleasure as always. We could probably find you at people.com and on a newsstand this coming Friday in People Magazine.
Thanks so much for talking to me, Dr. Andy, and have a terrific evening and a terrific night.
I will. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Oliver Jones of People Magazine. We didn't get into his poetry credentials today, but he's also the winner of the Glasscock Poetry Award. Sylvia Plath won it, Robert Lowell won it, and so did Oliver Jones. Well, we're going to take a quick jazz break, hear a public service announcement, and then speaking of great poets, I'm going to get Stephen Gray on the telephone. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Hope you're enjoying this music by the Ray Brown Trio. This is one of his last CDs. It's called the Ray Brown Trio Live at Starbucks. This particular track is called Love You Madly. If you know the song, you might be a little surprised by that, but there you go. You can see how Ray Brown on bass is really being emphasized. There's an event coming up that you may want to add to your calendar this coming Friday from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Vanderhoof Studio Theater at the Mondavi Center. The UC Davis Campus Community Book Project, which, as you might know, the book this year is Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? The book project is presenting Asian Voices, student performances on identity discovery. It's directed by Alex Liu, who I've enjoyed interacting with via email. Asian Voices is made up of stories that go deep beyond the surface, stories that have historically and culturally been misrepresented, stereotyped, and misappropriated by mainstream media and culture. These are stories that are rarely explored, expressed, and performed on stage. This one night only, this coming Friday, performance includes stories, performances, and monologues that are raw and pull no punches. The performers and the performances tackle traditional and non-traditional themes such as identity, racism, body image, politics, sexuality, and family dynamics from a unique and fierce Asian Pacific American perspective. Again, that's this coming Friday, November 19th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Vanderhoof Studio Theater at the Mondavi Center. This is a free event, so seats are limited. You should arrive before start of the presentation. The doors will close at 6:30 p.m. And a reminder, although this is sponsored in part by the Office of Campus Community Relations, you should know that due to strong language, the performance may not be appropriate for minors. A couple weeks ago, I had three minors living at home. Now just the two and the 13-year-old. No, 13-year-olds are still minors. Under 18, some of our smartest undergraduate freshmen may be even too young for this show. Asian Voices, this coming Friday at 6:30 p.m. Stephen Gray is my next guest on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stephen Gray has been living in San Francisco, it says here, since 1849, and he has rent control. Self-control is another matter. Inflicted with the narrative imperative at a young age, he deflects it in the direction of a warped poetics. Several years ago, he made a dramatic return to the open-minded mic, having languished for a long time in the soundless realm of the paper tiger. He's the assistant editor for Out of Our, a literary magazine founded by Sarah Page, and he's a member of the Revolutionary Poets Brigade, founded by Jack Hirschman. Stephen Gray, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hello, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Great to have you here. Thanks for joining me on the program. Before we get started, could you tell folks who don't know what the Revolutionary Poets Brigade is?
That is a group of people, most of them I would say are poets, founded by Jack Hirschman, the ex-poet laureate of San Francisco, and a few others. We just have an anthology that came out. It's about 350 pages. Poets from, I think, 25 countries, maybe 70 in all, different writers. It's we have several readings that we've had around town for this anthology. One was at the Beat Museum just the other day, which I was at, and it's been interesting. I would say, what am I trying to say here? It's a mixed bunch of people. Now it says revolutionary poets, but they are poets, and the politics are varied. Let's put it like that.
All
mainly
right.
Left-wing causes, I would say.
And how about you? How do you characterize yourself when, if and when you need to characterize yourself to explain what sort of writing you do and what sort of poet you are?
Well, that's a good question. I'm all over the map, and one way I look at it is I suppose a mentor of mine from many years ago is Picasso, and he would work in different styles, and sometimes if you look at the dates on some of his work, within a week or two or the same month, he was doing very different styles He could be cubist, he could be lyrical, he could be something else. And I just to say that I like that, and I tend to do that. I've been working sometimes with rhyming structures, probably too much, as a matter of fact, and I'm trying to get away from those. And so I get more into the open three verse, and which lends itself usually to spoken word. There's been a lot more. Well, I've been going to open mics a lot more lately, and sometimes being featured and just doing live readings. For some reason, I got away from that for years, and I regret it. I'm not sure why. My old friend Jack Foley would tell me, you know, the Homeric basis of poetry is very powerful. You need to be out there live, putting it out there, your physical presence on a stage, the words coming out of your mouth. And I'm very happy to say I finally got back to that. There are readings here in town all over the place. We have Brainwash, the Amsterdam Cafe. There's the 16th Admission on the corner, as a matter of fact. It's outside where all of the noise and traffic and drunk people walking by. But the 16th Admission Review comes out of that bunch by Charlie Getter and Brandon Loberg. There's also the Quiet Lightning series put on by Evan and Rod Shree.
Yeah, we've had Evan on this radio show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Very nice. He's doing some really good work. He's it's been a really good influence. They publish, actually, every time they have a reading, every couple of months, they publish the poets in a little book.
I know. Isn't that impressive?
Oh, it's very nice. And there's also the Word Party, which is now back at Viracocha. And that's jazz and poetry. So there's the Nova Jazz Quartet, and they will back up any poet. You just ask them what kind of, or you tell them, you say, I like a little blues, I like a little quiet, whatever, and they'll jump in and do it.
Excellent. And are you a longtime San Franciscan? Were you born in this area or somewhere else?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've been here. One reason I couldn't even afford to live here is that I've been here so long. I hate to say that I've been in the same apartment for more than 20 years. So, yes, it's true. I do have rent control. And but I was born down in Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Uh-huh.
It was an army camp, but I moved. I should say my family moved me all over the country. I think I was going to school in New York City at some point when I was a kid. But, mostly this area. Can't seem to get away from it.
Well, there's certainly a big poetic magnet, I always think of, right over the city of San Francisco, as we've been talking about. So many great events, interesting authors have been attracted to the city for decades now, and it's really rich in California literary history.
It is. It really is, and sometimes we forget that, we don't appreciate it, and it kind of, I would say the poetry scene here has gone definitely through ups and downs. I think for many years, as far as I could tell, there wasn't a whole lot going on in live readings, especially compared to now. I mean, the last few years, for some reason, it just exploded. I mean, we had every week we'd be going to, like, Club Deluxe, for example, on 8th Street. And that was jazz and poetry, and that's actually what drew me into it. For some reason, I realized, you know, I like these people, I should be doing this, and I got up on the stand, and it felt very good, so we're still doing it. In fact, next week, I'm at the Tenderloin Reading Series on Saturday, put on by Jonathan Hirsch. That's Tenderloin stuff.
Great. Well, Stephen, we're going to take a quick musical break and hear a public service announcement. Do you have a radio-ready poem there that you could share with listeners of this radio show?
Yes, I do.
Excellent. Well, we will get to that as soon as we return. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and I'll be right back with Stephen Gray on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
I think jazz lovers can recognize this as the great Duke Ellington tune, Caravan. If you're looking for a local poetry event, then point your caravan right over at the John Itzulis Gallery tomorrow. Why? For tomorrow is the print magazine review release party for Nameless Magazine. Yes, Nameless Magazine. It's the undergraduate literary journal of UC Davis. You can find them at nameless.org, or I believe, well, if you Google Nameless Magazine, you'll find it. And Nameless Magazine will be out in force tomorrow night at the John Itzulis Gallery, which is at 521 First Street here in the city of Davis. There will be dozens of the best undergraduate poets and prose writers who will be sharing their work. There will be an open mic afterwards. I'll be there. My colleague from the University Writing Program, Brad Henderson, will be there. The award-winning poet Brian E. Gilgaten will be there. There'll be a number of characters there at the John Itzulis Gallery. And that's tomorrow evening, the 18th of November at 8 o'clock. There'll be an open mic that starts at about 9. If you want to find out more about this event, you can visit poetryindavis.com. Stephen Gray is my guest this afternoon. Looking at his website, it looks like he's a photographer as well as a poet. He's lived in San Francisco for a long time, and I asked him to prepare a poem for us. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I am.
Great. What's the title of the poem that you're ready to present to listeners this afternoon?
This is called A Window of Opportunity.
All right.
She studied psychology and then she went to law school and was lying naked in a cemetery at some point, not only because she wanted to meet a man. It didn't prepare her for her neighbor, though. One morning she was woken by the plaintive sound of someone calling for help. She went to the window. Looking down and lying on the ground, there was a naked man. He couldn't move because he'd fallen from the third floor, having crashed through a plate glass window like a force had pulled him out of his room. If life was hard before, it's going to be a little harder with a broken back. It's like he landed on her senses and it traumatized her. Having a psychotic episode is not uncommon in this town. And I have felt the pull of emptiness while standing on the edge of a cliff and know someone who stumbled through a wall of glass by accident, becoming torn up as a religious martyr. And it bordered on the self-destructive when I was on drugs and listening to suicidal tendencies or fighting with a woman and somebody throws a wine glass. Maybe it's cathartic when you're breaking something. And I knew a woman who would cut herself because it helped her to relax. Life is difficult when you are conscious. And what happens if you know too much and find it is disturbing? So you're killing brain cells as you're toning down the knowledge in your mind. And some will beat their heads against it or drive out to the bridge and jump into a 100-mile-an-hour blackout that is shutting off the voices in their head. A few days later, he was talking to her with a back brace and titanium in his body holding him together. As a veteran of Desert Storm, he struggled with his post-traumatic stress, and more than once he thought a bomb was falling on him. forcing him to jump out the window. There are thousands who have brought the war back home, and many end up on the street.
Wow, that sounds like a poem that might have been inspired in part by conversations that you might have had in San Francisco.
You're right about that. It was a friend of mine who told me it was exactly that. She woke up one morning hearing and then saw the guy lying on the ground.
Boy, I've got a student in one of my classes this quarter who's an Iraq War veteran. And post-traumatic stress disorder is certainly real and traumatizing. Most people who have it have a lot of internal battles that don't often manifest themselves in such dramatic ways, but they certainly deserve our support and certainly treatment for what ails them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard there are some who they can't even live, you know, like normal lives in a house. They do end up on the street, and they can't. It's hard to adjust after the things you've been through in war, which we don't even know. And, of course, nowadays especially, all that is censored.
Yeah.
There's very little knowledge of what's going on over there and how brutal it is what these guys go through.
Absolutely. Well, Stephen Gray is the poet who's my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. So, Stephen, tell me more about your own literary heritage and study and reading. Who do you count as some of your own poetic heroes? And what have been some books or poets who have been meaningful to you that you encourage listeners to check out if they haven't already?
Well, that's interesting. If I go back to high school, for example, one of the poets that really got to me was Arthur Rimbaud.
Uh-huh.
A French poet born in 1854, I believe. And I don't think he made it past 37, something like that. In fact, he stopped writing after around 21 or 22. And I mainly read him in English because my French was terrible, and it still is. But I would definitely recommend him. I mean, you talk about not just an intensity, but intelligence as well, and a delirium, because he thought that was something he wanted to explore, and he did. But he did it with such intelligence. And there's a movie, actually, speaking of movies,
yeah.
And strangely enough, Leonardo DiCaprio plays Rimbaud.
I remember that. It's it's probably a good role for him because Caprio has always been so youthful-looking but also wise beyond his years.
Yeah, I had a hard time seeing him as Rimbaud, maybe because he's like a blonde guy from Southern California. And
right.
For some reason, didn't quite. But anyway, that was certainly one influence. Another, Gregory Corso. And strangely enough, I managed to run into him in Paris around 1975, 76. He was staying there. In fact, one of my old professors, Manos Valeritis, a Greek surrealist poet, he was on a sabbatical there, and I was in Paris with my French girlfriend for a while. So he said, "Oh, you want to meet Gregory Corso? He's in town." So I did, and that was very nice. That was I had read him earlier. I think of the beat poets, he was the one that I liked probably the most.
That I certainly envy you that. I've met a few of the beat poets myself, but never Gregory Corso. I've enjoyed seeing him on film. He has extended interviews in that film, Whatever Happened to Kerouac, for instance. And I've taught his poem, Marriage, in some of my poetry classes. But really, an impassioned poet. And if I remember correctly, he's buried right next to Percy Bysshe Shelley in Italy. Have you heard that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think I learned that at one of the beat conferences here in the city of Davis. That could probably be independently confirmed. I heard that the friends of Gregory Corso bought up the plot next to Percy Bysshe Shelley, and that's where Corso was found.
That is a crazy combination. But speaking of influences, I do not like Shelley very much, but I like Lord Byron a lot.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say Byron and Auden would be some early influences of another kind. I'm not sure where Byron is buried.
I believe that Byron is buried in Greece. He's a hero of the Greek people. He died while an advisor to the Greek army in its conflicts with Turkey. So if you go to different towns in Greece, you see a great number of statues of Lord Byron, who gave his life for Greek liberty.
That's right. And I'm not sure, did he make it past 40? I'm not sure he did.
I don't think so, because, you know, you might have seen this this graph that I've drawn for my students, that Wordsworth was born first and died last, and then Coleridge born after Wordsworth but died before him, Byron born after Coleridge but died before him, Shelley born after Byron but died before him, and Keats, the youngest of them all, born last and died first.
In Rome, tuberculosis?
That's right.
Like he was 24 at the most, I think.
Keats is an interesting person who I've written about. I lived near the Keats home when I lived in London, and got a chance to write about both Keats and Byron in essays that I later published, so that was fun. Well, we're coming up towards the end of the hour, so I wanted to ask you, Stephen Gray, if you have another poem that's ready for radio and that you could share with listeners of this radio show.
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
This is going to be a little different. This is for the painter Nathan Oliveira.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably me just trying to come to terms with his paintings. This is called Oliveira in Oblivion. A silhouette is full of the uncertain. It's surrounded by a curtain of a luminescent, ragged psyche in a color-wounded field. A discriminating haze of what you know and feel and can discern. A self-incriminating craze, a smoky nuance in the air. The figurine is undefined. The atmosphere is made of him exploded. His identity a mere formality. He knows about submersion in the world. His perception blending with the air. Unconsciously, the man's an android. Tragedy has torn the shadow of his self-respect. Whatever is left is posing in a void or standing in a random murk, a darkness he was born with in the anonymity of ectoplasm. His body occupying space, there is a busy reflection of his presence, a side of the person never seen, a side without a face, and time erased it. Can he stand it? The unconscious in a furious effort of osmosis struggles to attain the anthropomorphic, but his origins are smeared. The costume may be all he has to go on. Everything is gone or going. He wears an echo of the madness like a neurologic uniform, where the random and the dignified are meeting during a storm at night. The figurine with no decision is a residue of their collision and collusion in the background of a man. He's made of their blown traces in the air. The torn unknown has taken up its death, and then it walks.
Very nice. Stephen Gray, it's been a pleasure to have you on the radio show this afternoon. Thanks for making some time and sharing with us some of your poetry.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Stephen Gray is a San Francisco-based poet who's been writing for many years. He's the assistant editor for Out of Hour, which is a literary magazine founded by Sarah Page. He's a member of the Revolutionary Poets Brigade, founded by Jack Hirschman. I had promised you a poem by none other than the poet Dylan Thomas. I think we're just about out of time for that, so I'll have to share that with you next week. Instead, I'll remind you that the new Fall-Winter 2010 edition of the Davis-based Blue Moon Literary and Art Review is now available for purchase. Issue 6 features winners of the Will Albrecht contest, stories by Brendan Moore, Robert Earle, Yance Wyatt, photos by Ron Lane, and more. So that's the Blue Moon Literary and Art Review. Is now available tomorrow night, I should add. The Nameless Magazine print issue release party is going to take place at the John Itzulis Gallery. That's tomorrow, the 18th of November at 8 p.m. The Poetry Night Reading Series is proud to host UC Davis's official undergraduate literary and arts magazine, Nameless Magazine, and the release party for their 2009-2010 print issue on Thursday, November 18th at 8 p.m. That'll happen at the John Itzulis Gallery, 521 First Street. This is a student-run publication, and their motto is anything that tells a story. They also will offer a great deal of impressive poetry. If you want to find out more, you can visit namelessmagazine.com. Well, I'd like to thank my two guests this afternoon for appearing on the radio show. Our Hollywood correspondent, Oliver Jones from People Magazine, joined us from Los Angeles and told us about conversations he was having this past Saturday with James Caan on his left and Mr. Spacey, the Oscar-winning actor, on his right. Oh, to have that life. Wouldn't that be fun? And then we heard from Stephen Gray in the second half hour. He's a San Francisco-based poet. You can find him at a great number of open mics and other locations in that literary mecca known as San Francisco. Stick around for some great music, because Jess is here, and she's been picking out some CDs and records to play for you. I hope to see you all tomorrow night at the Nameless issue release party at the John Itzulis Gallery at 521 First Street. If I don't, it'll be a week from today for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Have a good night.